Blog Talk Radio.
I'm terribly sorry, sir, but your credit card
has been declined.
Your
unemployment benefits ran out two weeks ago.
What do you mean I'm overdrawn?
2 weeks ago.
I still have checks left. Checks
2 weeks
left.
Ago.
Too much month left over at the end of the money? Bad credit holding you back? Want to become a real estate investor but haven't won the lottery? Learn how to fix your credit, get out of debt, and build true financial independence with real estate in 2 hours a week. Tune in to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She'll show you how, without winning the lottery or working 10 jobs. And here's your host, Heather Wagenhall.
Oh, I want to be rich.
For this fabulous Saturday, February 26th, we are broadcasting live from the HQ Real Estate Investment Offices right here in sunny Scottsdale, Arizona. And this Saturday, like every Saturday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, we broadcast the Unlock Your Wealth radio program and talk about crisis management and financial wellness tools designed to help everyone manage their finances and attitudes. For the dual purpose of achieving immediate financial wellness today, and beginning the path to create financial freedom for you and your family tomorrow and into the future. And I am your hostess with the Financial Mostess, Heather Wagenhall. And I'm so excited about today's show. We have so much going on. It's so excited. Plus, we are clipping along. Can you believe we are in our ninth week of this season? I can't believe how quickly it's flown by. It's already time to create our credit. So, yeah, deep breath, sigh. So, money management isn't just about spending less or saving more, figuring out, do we have a budget? Do we break the budget? Do we have goals? Do we break the goals? Do we make new ones? Are our goals realistic? How can we do this? So we have all these questions, and then something that significantly impacts our financial status and our emotions, like credit, is something that many people forget about. They just say pay it down or get rid of the debt or whatever, but they never understand what optimum credit is and why you need it to build wealth quickly. Faster than you would if you just saved a dollar every day. There are two ways to get rich. One is a slow way. The other is a fast way. I don't know if anybody out there in listener land is hearing a bunch of crackling and whatnot, but I know I am. So if I apologize for that. I don't know exactly what's going on with the quality of the broadcast. But nonetheless, we will persevere. So we have a fabulous show on tap for you today. Our key this week is create credit, and we have two wonderful guests dropping by. We've got Dr. Robert Barone and Ryan Mack, both scheduled to appear today to help us learn more about our finances. And we also have some really great Minutes on Your Money articles, plus our Millionaire Minute and so much more. I know I jacked you guys last week on the Millionaire Minute. Didn't get quite around to it. But we had a phenomenal Unlock Your Wealth Radio to-go show on Tuesday. For those of you who are only listening once a week, you have an opportunity to have Unlock Your Wealth Radio throughout the week with our Tuesday show, our Unlock Your Wealth Radio to-go show. It's a 15-minute morning cup of millionaire motivation for you. We explore different elements of what makes millionaires millionaires and break them down and create step-by-step strategies so you can incorporate those habits and ideas into your life so you can start every day the millionaire way as well. It's a me too kind of thing. And we did something I've never done over the air before. I usually save it for our premium members at unlockyourwealth.com, but I actually did it on the air on our Tuesday show, and you can tell it was something that was super desired because the downloads have just been going through the roof. I can't believe how much value this is. I'm surprised that more people don't sign up to the website to get this stuff. But nonetheless, we did our six P's to affirmation success. And for those of you who are joining us for the first time, at the end of our broadcast, in our nuts and bolts section of our Keys to Riches segment, we give you affirmations each and every week to help you bolster your confidence and expand your abilities to be able to successfully manage money. Because we have this little inner curmudgeon that tells us that we're not capable of things or why try. And he's just trying to protect us from getting hurt. But in the process of protecting us from getting hurt, he's also not allowing us to grow into the people that we know we desire to be. And so we use an affirmation process to get us there. It helps bolster your confidence through repeated exposure. It also lets the unconscious mind work to create new neural pathways as if you were already experiencing these things for yourself. And so we did our six P's to affirmation success, so you have the tools to create your own affirmations. They have to be structured in a certain way in order to work. And without belaboring the point, just go and download Tuesday's broadcast if you haven't listened to it. Put it on your iPod. We are on iTunes. We are also on podcast.com. At Blog Talk Radio, you can always access our previous shows as well as our unlockyourwealth.com website. So I'm so excited about that because, it was so powerful, and I hadn't done it on the air before, but we did it on Tuesday, and it's having some phenomenal results. That was a great decision to change up that particular week's goal. If you missed Wednesday, you missed a lot about how to save at the grocery store. Yes, we went through so many shopping tips and ones that weren't just regurgitated from other places you might have heard before, some interesting techniques. So if you missed Wednesday's show, that's always our topic-driven show, giving you specific tips on how to handle particular situations. And next week, we are covering the ever-popular spring cleaning and garage sale tips. Since Punxsutawney Phil says winter's going to be over, we're not having an extended winter, you need to start preparing for that spring cleaning and maybe perhaps find a few bucks as well in your wallet that you didn't know you had because it was in your wardrobe. So we're going to go through that. I'm pretty excited. Also, we have our trivia question where you can win a fabulous prizes, one of which is you could win an autographed book from a previous show guest, or you could win a copy of my new book simply by calling in, chatting in, or emailing in your potential right answer to this week's trivia question. For those of you who are regular listeners, you always get a bone up on things because our trivia question is always based on a previous show. And this week's trivia question was based on the midweek update. And we talk about different ways to save at the grocery store. If you name one of those tips, either by calling in, chatting in, or emailing in to win, you can win a copy, and I will personalize it to you or to someone you would like to give the Bushido Business Book to. That is a $20 value, all for investing a few moments dialing the telephone at this number, 1-718-508-9002. That's 1-718-508-9002. Or you can chat in if you are listening from our blogtalkradio.com show page and you are in the chat room. Elena DeFior, our illustrious program director, is in, and she will be able to take your potential right answer as she moderates the chat room. So pop in, say hello to Elena, and try to secure your copy, personalized, of Bushido Business. Now we have, if you also want another edge, if you happen to miss a previous show and you want to be able to have a chance to win the fabulous trivia question but don't always have a chance to listen to previous broadcasts, I'm going to give you another way. Our electronic magazine, published each and every week by Elena, brings you news, tips, tricks, and information to help you and your family create immediate financial wellness and get on that path to financial freedom. And it contains the trivia question. Yay! So all you have to do is sign up for the electronic magazine, and you too could have a leg up on the competition. Simply send an email to ezine, E-Z-I-N-E, at uywradio.com. Or you can surf on over to our website at unlockyourwealth.com and sign up for our key membership, our complimentary gift to you, regular listener. And you will also be able to get the electronic magazine delivered to your inbox every Friday before the broadcast, so you have time to research the answer and be prepared to call in. So, again, to call in to win the trivia question, 718-508-9002. Chat in with Elena at our Blog Talk Radio show page or email us at trivia@uywradio.com. That's trivia at uywradio.com. Now, we have so much more in store coming up on Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. Up next, our Investor as Edge guest, Dr. Robert Barone, and so much more. You're listening to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. We'll be right back after this word from our sponsors. Stay tuned.
Hey, this is Coca Brown from the hit radio show, The Truth with Coca Brown, on HollywoodOutlaws.com radio. And you're listening to me on Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio.
Hi, it's Marty Logan here from the Top Gun Sales Academy. You know, one thing I've learned over the years is that the most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Naturally, Wayne Gretzky, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, and Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside. They knew they could easily become. Truly, financial coaching could be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation. 1-866-966-9420. That toll-free number again is 1-866-966-9420. Or simply visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Like, has your cell phone or iPod ever totally run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Now you can have all the power you need. The K3 Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power, or charge your device right on the spot. Available now for $99.95. at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis, K-I-N-E-S-I-S, industries.com. Like, go there, totally!
Even in today's economy, I, Count Dracula, have had to foreclose on my castle. But because of Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio, I have not only reacquired my castle, but I have opened a resort for the undead. Tune in to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She's the only one not trying to suck you dry.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. You are listening to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. And it is time. That Investor's Edge time. I am so excited because we have an incredible guest today. Dr. Barone currently serves on AAA's Finance and Investment Committee, which oversees $5 billion, that's billion with a B as in boy, that's a lot of money, $5 billion worth of investable assets. He served also as vice chair of those organizations from 2005 to 2007 and as their chairman from 2007 to 2009. Along with his son Joshua, he founded Adagio Trust Company in 2000, selling his interests of a $300 million institution in 2006 to open Ancora West Advisors. In 2004, Mr. Barone became a director of Allied Mineral Products, Columbus, Ohio's strongest refractory company, after 25 years of valuing its ESOP shares. And if you don't understand what that means, that's just okay, because Dr. Barone is joining us to explain all that. Welcome to the broadcast, Dr. Barone.
Well, it's nice to be here, Heather.
I am so excited to have you on. So tell us what exactly valuing ESOP shares are, because not everybody is going to know all of those fabulously technical terms.
Okay, well, an ESOP means that the employees own the company. ESOP actually means Employee Stock Ownership Plan. And so, you have publicly traded companies, that's the stock market. But in ESOP plans, the employees own the company and the shares aren't traded. So they need to have someone who has enough skill to figure out what the company's shares might sell for in the marketplace. And so I did that for that company for a number of years.
Well, that's pretty neat. We had a guest on last week that wants to kind of redesign America. He's got some pretty lofty goals, and one of the things that he feels that would help out every American is if people could have more employee stock ownership plans, and where people can be not just an employee but an owner, so they have another level or sense of pride in ownership. And so that's pretty exciting.
They have incentive to actually make the company do better because they're owners of the company, as opposed to being what we have today in much of America as management and labor as adversaries. In the successful ESOP companies, you have the employees and management working together to make everything better. And the ones that are successful are very wildly successful. And in some of the plans that I've seen, you can have folks who have, what we would consider to be fairly low-level jobs in warehouses or in factory floors, actually after 30 years retiring with $1 million or $1.5 million. So that's the power of the ESOP.
It's a pretty nifty deal. And this guy, I think his organization was called the Just Third Way. Now, you have written several articles about the economy. And I have I've had guests on the show that are suing the Fed. And you wrote an article in July last year called, "They Call This Financial Reform?" And your commentary was how it solves none of the current issues in the 2008 financial meltdown. Can you talk about what prompted you to write that article?
Well, I've been in banking and in finance all my life, in the last 10 years as an investment advisor. And I have to say, bankers have a pretty bad reputation. But I will say tell you this, that Wall Street and the investment community at Wall Street care nothing about their clients. They only care about their own wealth. And so there's kind of a joke. You go down to the yacht club, and you see all the yachts at the yacht club, and they all belong to the brokers. You ask yourself, where are the clients' yachts?
Exactly.
So you know, Wall Street is, I just wrote an article about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and the deal that they made with the big banks. Now, in 08 and 09, we, the taxpayers, saved all those big banks on Wall Street because whether or not you believe Goldman Sachs, I don't believe them, they would have gone bankrupt had it not been for the bailout that Hank Paulson, who used to be their chairman, arranged for them. So the note about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, here are two organizations that got into trouble over the years because a social policy was pushed on them for them to make loans, mortgage loans, to people who couldn't afford what they were buying. And, of course, that was the frenzy in 05 and 06. Everybody was buying real estate because the thought was, well, the prices of real estate just can't come down. Boy, did we learn a lesson about that. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac would buy loans from these big banks on Wall Street. And the way that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac work, they're so big, is that what they do is they give a license out to the institution. And the license says, as long as the loan meets this criteria, we will buy it from you. So you underwrite it, and we will buy it from you. And so in 04, 05, 06, 07, these big institutions on Wall Street were making loans without any documentation, called liar loans, call them what you will.
Low-doc or no-doc loans is what we called in the industry.
Right. But so they would make the loans and then sell them to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, stipulating that they met the criteria. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac paid them for the loans at par value or 100 cents on the dollar. The banks made all kinds of money. But now the loans have gone bad, and the subprime loans, over 50% of them have failed. And so Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are sitting with these loans. They're not paying. They're failing. So last fall, they went back to some of the banks who had sold them these loans and said, look, you know, we now have proof that these people that you sold us these loans to did not meet the qualifications that we had set down, that you certified that they met. And since you lied to us, we're going to give you back those loans, and you should pay us back the money that we paid you because you know, it was kind of fraudulent what you did to us. And so Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac tried to put back to Bank of America and to a bank called Ally Financial, the one with the funny commercials on TV, which is not really a new bank. It is a GMAC bank, GMAC. At first, at the end of December, GMAC, who had made approximately $300 billion of these loans and sold them to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae had asked them to put back, it was trying to put back to them $4 or $5 billion worth of the loans. They settled for, $400 million. Now, $400 million on $260 billion is less than 1% of these loans. And these loans were, remember, delinquent, 50% failing. And Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac accepted that and closed the books. Then on January 3rd, Bank of America announced that they would pay $2 billion to settle the same thing, $6 billion is trying to be put back to them, and they would settle for $2 billion. Okay? So that leaves $4 billion of failed mortgages that were fraudulent, and who's going to pay for that? Guess. The taxpayer. So so we've given a $4 billion gift that nobody knows about. On January 3rd, we gave a $4 billion gift to Bank of America. And all the other banks on Wall Street, J.P. Morgan and Goldman and all those banks, have now taken a little bit of money and put it into a reserve, and they're all going to settle the same way with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And so the American public is, again, eating probably $30 or $40 billion worth of money that the banks should eat, not the public. So we sit around and we say, and we watch as these guys on Wall Street give themselves tens of millions of dollars worth of bonuses for actually doing nothing and actually, actually having failed, and they give themselves bonuses, and we let that happen.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate. Now, I have a question I'm going to ask you that I know the answer to, but probably most of America never understood what it was, and so I want you to answer the question so you can explain to them why the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were hurting in the first place. So many people that put less than 20% down had to get what they called mortgage insurance. So why, if people had mortgage insurance and they defaulted, is this such a problem?
Because the insurance company failed. These were insurance companies that insured everything thinking good times would never end. And, of course, when you insure everything and you get premiums, it looks like you're making a lot of money until the claims come in. All the private mortgage insurance companies all failed. Same in the municipal bond area. The municipal bonds would go out, and if they had what is called an insurance wrapper, that's one of these insurance companies, would insure the bonds. Everybody felt safe because they were insured by an insurance company. But when the insurance company doesn't underwrite well and everything starts to fail, all the insurance companies fail. Those insurance companies who did the municipal bonds didn't fail yet because of the municipal issues. They failed because they were also insuring the garbage in the mortgage area. So, for example, Wall Street would, and this is kind of a gripe of mine, we educate people today in the U.S., and they go into the businesses that they think they can make the most money in. And so in the late 90s and early in the last decade, everybody was getting a degree in finance, and they were going to Wall Street, and they were applying the magic of financial formulas to Wall Street, and in effect, they were just gaming the system. So what we had was all of the garbage in the mortgage market was kind of conglomerated together. Think of it as being thrown into a trash can, and then they would say, look, all this trash in there, of all these mortgages, there'll be some of them that will pay. And so we will divide up the trash can into five different, what they call tranches. And the top tranche will get all of the money that pays. And so these insurance companies rated these tranches, and the top tranche got, maybe the top two or three tranches got AAA ratings. And so everybody in the public was confident. They're rated AAA, and I'm comfortable because I'm not taking much risk because they have a high rating. I equate that into throwing all the stuff in the garbage can, all the garbage in the garbage can, thinking that it's going to turn to honey. None of it did. Mm-hmm. And as a result, all of those things that were rated AAA all failed. And when they failed, the insurance companies had to pay, and of course they didn't have enough money to pay, and most of those insurance companies are now gone. And so even in the municipal bond market, we have a hard time finding an insurance company that's worth its salt to insure the municipal bonds. And so today when you buy a municipal bond, you have to look at who's issuing it and make sure that who's ever issuing it is fiscally responsible and can actually pay back the funds.
Now, I know you have another commitment, and so I'm very grateful that you were able to stop by on our show. Do you have time for one more question, Dr. Barone?
Yes, I'll take one more.
Okay. Gene Sperling, National Economic Council, good or bad? What do you think? Where are we headed?
One more time, please, repeat.
Gene Sperling.
Uh-huh.
As the National Economic Council head.
Uh-huh.
What do you think of that?
I don't know, Gene. What I do know about what's going on in our monetary and fiscal policy is that we are still not facing reality. We have the three camps. The first camp right now thinks that our economy is actually doing fine, and because the Federal Reserve has liquefied the whole world with trillions and trillions of dollars worth of dollars that they've created out there. The second camp is worried that what's going to happen is, since we've created all this money, the rest of the world is going to start refusing to buy our debt at low interest rates, which is a possibility. And then the third camp, which is a very minority-held view, but usually the minority views are the ones that turn out to be the right ones. The third camp says there are so many headwinds ahead of us in this economy that we are, especially in the second half of the year when we have the fiscal drag of the state and local governments all pulling back because they don't have any money, and high unemployment rates, and Europe in austerity. And by the way, today is the Irish elections, and the leading party there is likely to default on the Irish bonds, which is going to cause panic in the world. So they see headwinds and not a good economy in the second half of the year in the U.S. So all of this, and we have a fiscal policy that they're now debating. This is the U.S. government budget, not for 2011, but for 2012. That's at record deficit levels. So sooner or later, the world is going to say, look at us and say, you know, you have too much debt in the United States. We don't know if you're going to pay it back. And the interest rates that you're paying are way too low. And so interest rates are likely in the future to go up and go up significantly.
And that's unfortunate because we're encumbering our grandchildren's grandchildren with all of this. So how unfortunate. Well, I am so grateful, Dr. Barone, that you took your time out today on a Saturday to stop by and spend some time with us. And AncoraWest.com is Dr. Barone's website. And if you want more, surf over to UnlockYourWealth.com. We'll be right back with more after this.
Hey, this is Coca Brown from the hit radio show, The Truth with Coca Brown, on HollywoodOutlaws.com radio. And you're listening to me on Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio.
Hi, it's Marty Logan here from the Top Gun Sales Academy. You know, one thing I've learned over the years is that the most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Naturally, Wayne Gretzky, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, and Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside they knew they could easily become. Truly, financial coaching could be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation. 1-866-966-9600. 1-866-966-9420. That toll-free number again is 1-866-966-9420. Or simply visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Like, has your cell phone or iPod ever totally run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Now you can have all the power you need. The K3 Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power or charge your device right on the spot. Available now for $99.95 at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis, K-I-N-E-S-I-S, industries.com. Like, go there, totally!
Even in today's economy, I, Count Dracula, have had to foreclose on my castle. But because of Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio, I have not only reacquired my castle, but I have opened a resort for the undead. Tune in to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She's the only one not trying to suck you dry.
Greetings
and salutations, everyone.
Welcome back to the broadcast. You just heard from Dr. Robert Barone, and unfortunately he had to skedaddle on us, so we didn't get all the good stuff, but we do have linky links at unlockyourwealth.com on our show guests if you want to learn more about him. He has a fantastic way of looking at things, and I would encourage you to surf over to his website and check out some of the articles that he has written about reform needed at the FDIC and what the current administration is missing with regard to reform and why we need to pay attention to this inescapable debt. It's just kind of crushing us. So, anyway, we're grateful that he was able to pop by and visit with us for a while. And so I do not disappoint you as I have before, like last week.
I see the future. I can't afford it.
Yes, it is that time again for our Millionaire Minute, where we take and crawl into the heads of top millionaire thinkers and put out 60 seconds of tips, tricks, tools, and information that the millionaires use that the masses don't to get ahead. And today we are going to talk about prosperity. Prosperity is not just the act of having wealth or being prosperous, but prosperity that the millionaires have that the masses do not is a prosperity mindset. And prosperity is a mindset because when you operate with prosperity as a mindset, you open yourself up to the possibility of more. When we think abundance, when we think prosperous, as opposed to the opposite thoughts that are lack, not enough to go around, only so many pieces of the pie to be had, where when we think prosperity and when we think abundance, we think, oh, make more pies. There's enough for everybody. And with the prosperity mindset, you are able to carve out your little niche, and by empowering others, your piece of the pie grows too. So if you want more information on prosperity and the specific strategies to incorporate a prosperity mindset in your life, be sure to tune in on Tuesdays at 6:30 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for your 15-minute morning cup of millionaire motivation on Unlock Your Wealth Radio to go right here at unlockyourwealth.com. So now it's time for our minutes on your money. And we have some interesting articles for today. New home sales fall. Guess how much? Not a little, but a surprising 11.25%. According to Les Christie, staff writer at CNN Money, the new year brought little cheer to new home builders. Their sales fell a shocking 11.25% between December and January, and 18.6% from 12 months earlier. The total number of new homes sold in January, Sally sells the shells by the seashore. Here we go. Now we're on track. The total number of new homes sold in January was a seasonally adjusted 284,000, which was down from 325 in December. In total, the whole market is down 80% from its peak in July of 2005, when the annualized rate of sales hit 1.5 million. The big problem facing developers right now is that they face significant competition with foreclosed homes, which sell at bargain basement prices. So why buy new when I can buy a gently used home and be able to save so much money and make it my own anyway? So, you know, that's your competition. And 26% of all homes sold last year were foreclosures. And, you know, housing, you know, is a price-driven market, said real estate analyst Michael Larson of Weiss Research Investors. Ordinary home buyers can and will buy houses, but only if the price is right. That makes life tough for new home builders who have to compete with all these distressed properties and nearly new foreclosures. Now, when did this start? Okay, this is all I have. This is like my question to the universe, because I don't have an answer for it. Well, I have an opinion, but I'm waiting for anybody to tell me why the government made the choices that it did with regard to the markets when this happened in 2007 and we knew we were in trouble in the mortgage markets. Why did we not set up an RTC, a Resolution Trust Corporation, like they did here in Arizona? See, I've lived this already once, being from Arizona, and we already had this here. And there was an effective way that the government resolved it, and it was the use of a temporary corporation called the RTC. And it destroyed the market price and value here in Arizona. But once it was over, guess what? It was over. It was over. And in a short period of time, it was over. But now, because they have chosen to prop up banks and deal with this in a different, less constructive manner, holding back foreclosures and things like that, we have perpetuated what could have been cleaned up in less than a year. We have allowed it to perpetuate over a four-year period. And until, or I should say, unless and until we get rid of them all, wipe them off the blocks all at once, we are going to have a faltering mortgage and real estate market. It's just how it's going to be. But it blows me away that why can't we do something a little bit more constructive if it's all about value? But I don't think it's about that. I think there are other agendas going on. But anyway, that's just my editorial embellishment on this particular topic. This release of news followed Wednesday's more positive industry report showing that sales of previously owned homes inched up slightly during January. And a bulk of those sales came from bank repos and other distressed properties. There is always a market for new homes because a lot of people like me want to put their own mark on stuff. Maybe it's a cootie factor. They just kind of want their own deal. And no matter what, they're going to build the house that they've been dreaming of, and they don't want to take somebody else's nightmare on potentially, because that sometimes can happen when you buy the Tom Hanks and Shelley Long's version in the movie Money Pit. And you never know what you're going to get when you get a foreclosure. So there is still a market, but how big is it? One of the biggest market segments is single moms who don't want to have to fix up things. They look at used homes first, but they see the foreclosures and don't like what they see and are probably not interested in doing the handiwork, so that's why they go to buy the new ones, so they have the warranty and all that good stuff. Some progress has been made by home builders in reducing their inventory of unsold homes, according to Brad Hunter, chief economist with Metro Study. And in Atlanta, builders reduced their glut by 35% over 2010. And Tampa inventory fell 17%, and in Phoenix, it went down more than 10%. But, you know, we still have challenges, you know. There's still 188,000 new homes on the market, and we're not absorbing that inventory. It's just the way that it is. The housing market is going to stumble and stumble, and everybody's like, oh, I don't know, and everybody's sitting on the fence waiting to get in the game when the price is going to go up. If it's time to move and you need a place and buying over renting is the right option for you and your family, then you need to do it without regard to what's going to happen in the future. You need to do what's right for you and your family now. Because one of the things that we forget about when it comes to home values and prices is that we forget about the value we receive being in the home while we're there. People just, I don't know why that escapes people. There is a certain value, and you can assign a rental value, because you would be living somewhere if you weren't living in that home. So there is a satisfaction and a level of livability that you have when you rent or when you buy versus when you rent, because you can do what you want inside there. You can paint the walls. You can put carpet tile, a combination of both, whatever, in your own home. But when you rent, that's not always the case. And if you want, you know, purple this and green that, it's your choice, and you can make it yours. And when we go to sell, when we think about buying, when we go to sell, we think about it from a dollar value perspective as an investment, and not that it's not a good idea to consider that. If it's your primary residence, there's this intrinsic, intangible value that you receive when it's your own that you don't have living somewhere else, and you have to factor that in or quantify that in some way. And most people don't. At the end of the day, it's just about the nuts and bolts and the numbers, but there's that intrinsic value that we forget. And you can't allow that analytical side to drive whether or not you're going to buy a property or which property you're going to buy simply based on the resale value if you're living in it. Now, if you're buying it for an income property, totally different story. That's when that's appropriate. But we must remember that when it's our own property, that we need to think in different terms. And those terms are we have an intrinsic value that we receive that's not necessarily quantifiable by a dollar amount. So that's my advice. If home ownership is right for you and you can afford it, you're able and willing to do that, then do it. And don't worry about what's going to happen in the marketplace. Because, again, there's that intrinsic value. It's intangible. You can't quantify it. Surveys find companies plan to give raises. Sandra Block from USA Today writes, after 3 years of cutbacks, furloughs, and wage freezes, the outlook for American workers is improving. Workers will receive the largest pay increase this year since the start of the financial crisis, according to a survey scheduled for release by Towers Watson, a human resources consulting firm. Merit-based pay increases are expected to average 3% this year, up from 2.75% last year. It's still shy of the 3.5% increase pre-recession, but it's getting close to where it was. Laura Seagen comments from Global Practice Leader, or she is a Global Practice Leader for Towers Watson. And the findings were based on a survey of about 400 large and mid-sized employers conducted in January and February. In addition, most companies have lifted the salary freezes also that they implemented during the recession. Only 5% of companies that froze salaries in 2010 are planning freezes in 2011. Rising oil prices pose new threats to the U.S. economy. In case you have been out of the technological loop and not seen any media, this article is by Motoko Rich, Catherine Rampel, and David Streetfeld from the New York Times. And the American economy just can't catch a break. Last year, as things started looking up, the European debt crisis flustered the fragile economy. And now, under similar economic circumstances, Middle East turmoil comes into play. Energy prices have surged in recent days as a result of the political violence in Libya that has disrupted oil production over there. Prices are also climbing because of fears the unrest may continue to spread to the other oil-producing countries. If the recent rise in oil prices stick, it will most likely slow a growth rate that is already too sluggish to produce many jobs in this country. Some economists are predicting that oil prices just above $97 a barrel on Thursday could be sustained well above the $100 barrel benchmark. And if energy costs don't rise higher, lingering uncertainty over the instability over there in the Middle East could just drag down our growth, not just in the U.S., but worldwide. According to Daniel Yergin, the oil historian and chairman of IHS Cambridge Energy Research Associates, says, "We've gone beyond responding to the sort of brutal technicolor of the crisis in Libya." He says there is also a strong element of fear of what is next and what's next after the next. Before the outbreak of violence in Libya, the Federal Reserve had raised its forecast for United States growth in 2011, and a stronger stock market helped consumers be more confident about the future and more willing to spend, but other sources of economic uncertainty besides oil prices have come into sharper focus in recent days. And after a few false starts, housing prices have continued to slide again and further, with the new home sales drop, as did big-ticket items like appliances and durable goods. The government reported Thursday that the initial panic from last year had faded. Europe's deep debt problems are still there and creating another wild card for the global economy. And protests turning violent in Greece this week is a new response to more austere measures. So we have our own budget and debt crises here in the United States. So it's a plethora of never-ending negative stories. You know what it kind of reminds me of is, I think about what's going on here as like what is happening to individual Americans who go out and they get the 90 days same as cash, 12 months, no interest financing, no payments, all of that crap on all of their, you know, curtains and couches and crap that they bought for their houses, and then all of those cars and electronic toys that they bought on credit, and, you know, now that they've broken half of them or they're bored with them and the luster and polish of the new pretty things has worn off and we're just left with our payments. Now we're all upset that, you know, we have to pay the piper and we're pouting like little kids, you know, God, I can't believe I have to pay all this debt, those crazy bankers charging me interest. Well, they facilitated your choices. And I think of the indignance that people have. Like, I can't believe you expected me to pay that back. Those things aren't even new anymore. And, like, we reversed the delayed gratification. We went for instant gratification. And there was the value in the delayed gratification because we worked hard and we created our blood, sweat, and tears. So when we finally got that moment of our new item, when it was shiny and pretty and unused, we treasured it more. We took care of it. We valued it because of the effort we put in. When we got it on instant gratification, we're like, whatever. And we thought the party wasn't going to end, so that's why we did, you know, 90 days, same as cash, 12 months, no payments, no interest on our financing. And so we just partied like there was no tomorrow, and then all of a sudden, the bill came because tomorrow showed up. And tomorrow isn't tomorrow anymore. It's today. And those people wanted to get paid back. I mean, shame on the bankers for thinking that they should get paid back for the value and the service that they provided you months ago to get your instant gratification item then. So what I'm seeing going on with the government in the marketplace, you know, and how it's affecting our economy is that, you know, the government is, like, upset in a way that all of that spending and all of those programs and funding and crap that we had to have in our bloated government with jobs that we don't even know what people do half the time on our taxpayer dollar, and now they're whining and crying because they have to pay the bill after the party's over. Well, what did you think was going to happen? Tomorrow comes in the form of it's today and it's here. So anyway, just, you know, my little take on what's going on. And so, of course, the economy is going to falter because, well, we've got stress because the government has said we needed more money, we needed more money. We gave it to them, and then they spent even more than what we gave them. And now they're saying it's not enough. And so, you know, we're going to be Libya here and Greece and Egypt soon. There's going to be an overthrow soon here. Mark my words, I predicted the mortgage market collapse almost to the day. So I'm going to say in the next 5 years, we're going to have that same stuff start happening here. State by state, little mobs, it's going to start. The foment is already there. People are organizing. They're having their little meetings at Starbucks. And people are getting fed up, and they're not going to take it any longer. And if our representatives that we have elected to office to represent our opinions, not their own selfish interests, don't start acting like our representatives and start making a difference down there in Washington, I have a feeling that the American people are just not going to take it anymore, especially because we have a completely different mindset than all of those people that have been oppressed for many years around the world, because we have this entitlement mentality because we are fabulous Americans. And so we're not going to take as long. We're not going to take hundreds of years to finally overthrow our government. We're going to do it in a much faster fashion when we can't take it anymore. And you'll be surprised at the individuals that will be leading the charge, and it'll probably be one of your neighbors if it's not you. And last but not least, the 2011 National Financial Capability Challenge is out from the Institute of Consumer Financial Education. There is a new educator toolkit with lesson plans that teachers can use to help students prepare for the upcoming challenge. The challenge, which will include a voluntary online examination for high school students beginning March 7th, it teaches young Americans about saving, budgeting, investing, and other important skills critical to building a strong financial future. The highest scoring students on the exam will be recognized through a national award ceremony in Washington, D.C., and other high scorers will receive official award certificates. It's so exciting. Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner says empowering students with the knowledge they need to make smart financial choices about saving, budgeting, and investing for the future is good for the long-term strength of our economy. It will help ensure that young people have the skills they need to achieve financial security, and that will help us continue to build the recovery of our economic foundation on a strong and sustainable one. Our students need to graduate high school ready for college and a career if they're going to compete in today's global economy, says U.S. Education Secretary Arne Duncan. Incorporating financial literacy through the Treasury's online educator toolkit and other significant learning materials will encourage students to make smart, long-term investments such as preparing to pay for college. How about that? Because that's the one loan you can't default on because Uncle Sam will get you through the IRS. It's the only debt you can't expunge when you file a bankruptcy. So if you think you're going to go to school BK and get rid of it, thanks for playing. So, and that is it for today's Minutes on Your Money. And I can't believe we've already blazed through the first hour of this show. We have got so much more coming up. And Mr. Ryan Mack up next. And this week's key, Create Credit, all coming up on Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. stay tuned.
Stay tuned for the second half of Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio with the Keys to Riches, right after this.
Hey, this is Coca Brown from the hit radio show, The Truth with Coca Brown, on HollywoodOutlaws.com radio. And you're listening to me on Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio.
Hi, it's Marty Logan here from the Top Gun Sales Academy. You know, one thing I've learned over the years is that the most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Naturally, Wayne Gretzky, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, and Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside they knew they could easily become. Truly, financial coaching can be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation, 1-866-966-9420. That toll-free number again is 1-866-966-9420, or simply visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Like, has your cell phone or iPod ever totally run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Now you can have all the power you need. The K3 Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power or charge your device right on the spot. Available now for $99.95 at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis, K-I-N-E-S-I-S, industries.com. Like, go there, totally!
Even in today's economy, I, Count Dracula, have had to foreclose on my castle. But because of Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio, I have not only reacquired my castle, but I have opened a resort for the undead. Tune in to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She's the only one not trying to suck you dry.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. You are listening to Heather Wagenhall to Unlock Your Wealth Radio. I am she, your hostess, with the Financial Mostess. And I'm so excited about our next guest. Ryan Mack is joining us today. He is president of Optimum Capital Management. His life's mission is to build and develop a durable financial empire geared toward educating his community and beyond. He graduated from the University of Michigan Business School, which is ranked number one in the country, with a concentration on finance. His career in equity markets began in Detroit as a stock trader and later as a trader for the largest NASDAQ trading firm in the nation, Knight Securities. And having a passion for teaching, he established his own financial awareness group in 2003, where he began to publish regular newsletters about financial issues that were of interest to people of all income levels. In addition to being a financial advisor working with many prominent clients across the U.S., he charitably lends his support to inner-city communities by coordinating workshops and creating economic empowerment initiatives that teach the principles of understanding the power of financial literacy. Unions, churches, government-subsidized housing communities, muni programs, nonprofits, inner-city organizations, and colleges and universities have benefited from Mr. Mack's financial workshop programs that he has developed and instructed through Optimum Capital Management. He is an accomplished professional speaker, and he now joins us today to talk about what he does in the community and his quest to create financial literacy for everyone. Ryan, welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure, and I'm humbled to be here.
Well, I'm so excited to have someone like you on the broadcast, working in the trenches with a similar story that I have in helping folks to help themselves and empower themselves. And you have such an interesting life story. And I just kind of wondered, you know, what would lead you to wanting to be in the mortgage, finance, Wall Street, money markets? What would lead you that direction in life from college?
Well, I mean, when I graduated school, I've always I was a Bloomberg Terminal addict, and when I was introduced to the Bloomberg Terminal in the business school of the University of Michigan, that was my first interest in equities markets, and I went from there to working for a small stock trading firm in Detroit, and then I went to the largest NASDAQ trading firm in the New York City area. And I love doing it, love the money, love working with markets, love trading stocks. I was a biotechnology stock trader. But I realized there was something a little bit more than just sitting behind a computer terminal and trading stocks. So one day my aunt called me and said, "Ryan, what is a stock?" And that was about 3 weeks before I actually left Wall Street. And it really struck me that individuals that my own family did not know enough about or anything about what I was doing for the past 5 or 6 years. So that inspired me to take an offer or receive an offer originally from a financial planning company, and I wanted to go to financial planning to teach this information to more individuals. But then they told me on the day I was supposed to receive the offer and to sign the paperwork, and I was in there, I was bragging and said, "Hey, I can take your company to my church, take your company to the to my community, my neighborhood." And the guy said this. He said, "Ryan, unless you work only with high net worth individuals, and everybody else is a waste of time." And I didn't come from a family that had a lot of means and income growing up. So essentially, what he was saying is that I could only work with individuals who were not like my own family. And so I'm from Detroit again, and that really struck me as something. There's no point in me getting into a field if I can't service those that even my own family would need this information. It's my philosophy that the less money you have, the more important it is. So I wanted to work with all demographics, and so that's why I started Optimum Capital Management. But I also, at the same time, pretty much became an adjunct professor and developed a personal finance course, and I taught at local community colleges and local colleges. I'm currently on the board of MacGregor's College in Brooklyn, and just started to teach as much as possible, and that's what really drove the passion. I didn't want to just make money off of it. I just wanted to give the information back to the community so they can get educated, so they can learn and learn how to fish for themselves.
You know, that's such an inspiring story, and it makes it sound like you're my twin brother. It's so funny because of similar things, you know. While it was great making all that money on Wall Street, there just wasn't a level of satisfaction there. And that's why I turned to investment advising as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those companies are there to make money, and I don't begrudge them that. You know, I get what they're saying when they say, "Well, you got to work with high net worth individuals." And I got that too, but I thought, you know what, but those people, they can go anywhere. You know, I want to make more of a difference, you know, because just making money in and of itself or making rich people richer, it was cool I was making money, but I felt empty, like I wasn't making a difference. I mean,
right.
What's another million to somebody who's a multi-millionaire or a billionaire? I mean, it's
exactly.
A chunk change. They'll rent an island for the weekend for $1 million on what I did. That's
right.
You know, so you kind of just, you feel so unfulfilled. And, you know, like you, I came up a scrapper. I had to envy the dirt poor kids because they had dirt.
Uh-huh.
We were so poor, we didn't even have the dirt. So I get where you're coming from. And what do you think, because you and I, similar paths, we're able to figure out, against all of our pre-programming by our parents about money or the lack of programming about how to manage money. How did you pull yourself up to decide to go that way? Like, what flipped the switch from you that made you different from the rest of your family?
I guess my mother's always instilled in us a certain level of activism. She was a educational activist, where she, again, was on subsidized living, but I saw her pull herself up through the ranks and through the amount of love, start earning additional amounts of capital and putting herself through a higher level of a job level. She became the first black director of admissions for any public school in Michigan, for the University of Michigan Dearborn campus. So when she had seen her transgress through that level, and again, she did it only because she understood that the more money she made, the more she'd be able to assist myself and my brother, keep food on the table, clothes on our back, and pay our way through school. So it was that sort of dedication that I would see in her to give her life and sacrifice for something greater than herself, which were, in her case, was her two children, that really just showed me a lot of love. And that, and myself, without my brother is a labor attorney, deals a lot of he's one of the most prominent labor attorneys in the state of Detroit, in the state of Michigan, and definitely the most prominent in the city of Detroit. And myself really just wanted to do something in order to make a difference through using our career paths to create something, using love and managing our own money in a way to move ourselves up the ladder of success, to not for the sake of ourselves, but for the sake of someone else. Madam C.J. Walker said that, you know, why did you want to become the first African-American millionaire? She said, well, the more money I make, the more people I can help. And I think that's the type of mentality that my mother's always demonstrated to me. And I got my first job when I was 11 and a half years old. So, and from that point on, even I lied and I said I was 12. But from that point on, I had to buy all my school clothes. So that was essentially, it just taught me a whole lot about what it means to earn money, save money. And because of that, what could I do because I saved money? I remember we do a lot of work with gang members to those on Wall Street. And, you know, we go from Wall Street to Main Street to the side street to the back alley. It doesn't matter. We teach anywhere who will listen. And we have a lot of those who are formerly incarcerated gang members who we've assisted to create businesses. And I remember one of them gave me a call, and he called and said, Ryan, I would love to help you out. I have a couple of clients I wanted to send you away. And the funny part about this was that about a year before that, and almost it brought a tear to my eye, because about a year before that, he was just coming home from Rikers Island, and we sat him down after a gang intervention between the Bloods and Crips, and we sat him down, and I pulled him over to the side, because he's one of the leaders, and we met for breakfast next morning, and we taught him how to form a construction company, and we helped him form it, and he had only about $300 to his name, and we kind of just guided him to the LLC and got him to the bank to get the bank account to the IRS.gov and assisted him with his electrician's license that he obtained for free from a not-for-profit in the local community. And next thing you know, about 5 or 6 months later, he has about 10 employees and two project managers, and he's getting various calls, making actual money. And 6 months later from that, he's calling me on the phone, giving me advice and guidance on what I should do. And that is really how the community is supposed to operate. And this is one reason why I just feel adamantly about if we continue to just reach out to those in our community who do need assistance. But you have to empower yourself first. Again, that's the premise of the book I wrote. It's really, really trying to educate individuals on why financial literacy is not only important for yourself, but it's important for others. It's important to empower yourself, put yourself in a better situation, not for the sake of self-empowerment, but putting yourself in a better situation for the sake of others, that you are become a more effective contributor to society. And we've seen a lot of those from Wall Street individuals who come back to us and say, thank you for the tremendous workshops and helping us diversify portfolios and minimize taxes, or individuals who are gang members and fully incarcerated who come to us and say, Ryan, I didn't think I had a chance. Now I have my own company, and we're moving ourselves forward, and I'm hiring other individuals in the community to move themselves forward. So it's really, no matter what your age level, or demographic, race, creed, or culture, financial literacy can assist you, and I wanted to be the one to provide it.
That's so exciting, and that's such an incredible inspiration, or I should say, it's an incredible observation of the value of one financially literate individual influencing his entire village. And what we will do is I want to talk more about your new book that just came out, Living in the Village, A Practical Guide to Building Your Financial Success by Strengthening Your Community. Thanks so much for tuning in. We have more Ryan Mack on Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. We'll have more right after this.
Thank you. Close more sales. Close more sales. Close more sales. Hi, this is Commander Marty Logan from the Top Gun Sales Academy. Are you the best salesperson you can be today? If not, allow us to help you to outpace your competition, your fellow peers, and recession-proof your business. Visit us at www.thetopgunseminars.com, 480-626-5883. Don't make excuses. Make it happen.
Hey, this is Coca Brown from the hit radio show, The Truth with Coca Brown, on HollywoodOutlaws.com radio. And you're listening to me on Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio.
Hi, it's Marty Logan here from the Top Gun Sales Academy. You know, one thing I've learned over the years is that the most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Naturally, Wayne Gretzky, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, and Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside. They knew they could easily become. Truly, financial coaching could be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation. 1-866-966-9420. That toll-free number again is 1-866-966-9420, or simply visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Like, has your cell phone or iPod ever totally run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Now you can have all the power you need. The K-Free Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power or charge your device right on the spot. Available now for $99.95 at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis, K-I-N-E-S-I-S, industries.com. Like, go there totally!
Even in today's economy, I, Count Dracula, have had to foreclose on my castle. But because of Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio, I have not only reacquired my castle, but I have opened a resort for the undead. Tune in to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She's the only one not trying to suck you dry.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. You are listening to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. And we have Ryan Mack with us. I'm so excited. And right before the break, we were talking about his new book called Living in the Village, A Practical Guide to Building Your Financial Success by Strengthening Your Community. And I'm so amazed at your insight with this book, Ryan, because to really, in a salesy term, you know, reduce it to the ridiculous so people will want to go forward, you know, it's like, oh, yes, it's $10,000, but, you know, it's really 35 cents a day. In that type of analogy, I'm thinking, you know, it is so vital that it's not just about one individual's financial responsibility or financial literacy, but what they can do with that.
Exactly. I mean, this is a mentality that we, I think, did not have in 2007. In 2007, what happened was when the two most powerful forces in the universe are love and selfishness. And they're always battling against each other. And every action that you do is one of the two. You're doing it out of love, you're doing it out of selfishness. If you're doing it for someone else, or you're doing it for yourself, for the sake of yourself. And in 2007, what happened was we saw an economy that where the banks were essentially created something similar to a taxpayer-funded Atlantic City casino, where if they would lose, the taxpayers would bail them out. If they would win, they would reap record profits, and they're still doing that today. Government would come in, and they would do a lack of regulation because they wanted to guard their special interests and lobbies. But then individuals, too many individuals. If we're real with ourselves, too many folks had 500 FICO scores and no money in the bank and allowed them, individuals, to maybe coerce them or not seek the appropriate amount of knowledge to purchase homes, even though they weren't necessarily able to purchase a home. I mean, I saw individuals were earning $30,000 a year, convinced that they were going to buy a $500,000 piece of property. I mean, this is something that we have to, as a society, you know, and any time that you make a decision and you don't take the time to get the proper knowledge into purchasing the biggest investment of your life, that's a decision that's not out of love, it's out of selfishness, because every decision that we make needs to be filled with knowledge. And so we can't control the government all the time, we can't control the corporations, but what we can control is how we do with our own finances. And foreclosure not only impacts your household, but it impacts your neighbors and your entire community. And we're seeing that across the country, and that this type of decision-making or lack of effective decision-making, essentially what it did was allow individuals to capitalize off and use greed to try to capitalize. And when the system failed, we saw the entire economy collapse because of decisions based upon greed and selfishness. Now what we have to do is understand that do we love our families and ourselves enough and our community enough to do the right things, to buy homes the right way, to save, to do the right things and invest with our capital so we can prepare ourselves. We don't have to spend our golden years working for the golden arches. These are certain things that we need to do out of love so we can better effectively give back to our society and make the world a better place.
That is so well spoken. One of the things that I saw, and that's why I left mortgages and went into real estate, because I couldn't get around all of that entitlement mentality. And I'm like, just because you work hard doesn't mean that you deserve to live like someone who is more productive in less time.
Yeah, exactly.
And working hard, yeah, we all work hard, but it's, are we being productive? Are we being effective with our time? And our, you know, and that entitlement mentality was so hard for me to get around. And my underwriter, you know, got mad because I used to do more loans when the interest rate was 9.5%, and that was a smoking deal on a 30-year fixed rate loan in the 90s.
Yep. Yep.
And I did more loans then than after 9/11 when all the refis started, and then that whole entitlement mentality grew because interest rates stayed so low for so long. And I don't think that we thought that was going to happen. I don't think that we thought that the Fed would leave rates so low, because we created artificial economies. We created artificial entities in the sense that, you know, we blew out, especially here in Arizona, we blew out construction like there was no tomorrow. And the median home price got so far out of whack from its relationship to the median income that it was not sustainable. And I was saying that on my radio show in 2003 and 2004. Don't worry about the real estate bubble. The mortgage bubble is more important. It's going to be more devastating than you could ever imagine. And nobody listened. Everybody flew by the seat of their pants. Well, I should say a few people listened, and those people, my clients, became multimillionaires, and my real estate buddy friends that listened to me and did what I told them to position themselves for what was going to be the most incredible movement, not necessarily good, but the most incredible movement of real estate ever. And I made several people multimillionaires just by that little bit of insight based on you can't sustain greed like that or entitlement. I mean, because this is beyond greed. It was an entitlement. It's not, you know, it's where, you know, the person that puts forth minimal effort expects the same rewards that the person that puts forth maximum effort receives. And the entitlement is what killed me. And I was just like, what makes you think that you deserve? And then I had to take a step back, and I'm like, oh, wait a minute. I know the answer to this. The media, movies, yep. Television, people telling you through the radio how much you deserve this. And the credit markets kind of exacerbated that by saying, okay, you know, 90 days, same as cash, 6 months, no interest. And they spurred that and encouraged that entitlement mentality along. Because I don't necessarily think it's wrong to do something in your best interest. You know, I think selfish has a negative connotation, but it's to be out for one's own best interest, which I don't think is bad. But the sense of entitlement that people have, that they deserve something they clearly haven't earned or worked or saved for, is the part that I have the biggest challenge with.
In my perspective on that, really, then, when you're talking about selfishness, I do think I actually do feel it's love to look out for your own best interest, at least not for the sake of yourself. When, you know, my mother would make sure that she would elevate herself up the ladder of success, become the first black director of admissions at the University of Michigan, Dearborn. That was in her best interest, but it wasn't for the sake of herself. She understood that she was no good to myself and my brother if she was still living on subsidized living. So I think that we just have to, again, just retool how we're looking at what is the proper definition of love and selfishness, because, you know, she didn't just say, I'm trying to be successful, and for the sake of successful, she understood that whatever additional dollars she made, she could provide more for her family. Because, you know, it's hard to help somebody and give back to your community if you're going through foreclosure. It's hard to give back and give back to your community if bill collectors are calling you 2-3 times a day. And as a senior contributor, these past 3 years, about 2 years ago, when they were really going through the whole, I remember I had a lot of battles with a lot of conservative analysts on television, and really one of the entitlements was, when you talk about entitlements, was with the AID bonus structure. And to me, that just raised my blood pressure, only for the simple fact that, you know, that conservative person said, well, AIG, they deserve the bonuses. They deserve to keep the bonuses because they are the ones who are adding capital and liquidity to the capital markets. And, you know, my contention was that, well, listen, we do a lot of work with union members, AFSCME, SEIU, the Teamsters, and whatnot, so, and UAW. So we do a lot of work with unions. All of them have had, in some form or another, their contracts renegotiated. But for somehow, once we bail out an AIG, as far as I'm concerned, they had this whole derivatives trading department that was making nothing, was making no product, but just really sucking capital out of the system. We bailed them out. We saved them. And with the bailout dollars, what they did was they took that money and paid the Goldman Sachs. Well, that's not fair, and it's not right, and people have the right to be upset about that. And individuals, we do a lot of teaching when it comes to financial predators. We want to talk about that from the corporate level in our own community. You walk down the street, you can't walk down two steps without seeing a check cashing place within various communities, rental centers, refund anticipation loans, title loans, payday loans, cash advances. These types of things are predators in our community. What they're doing is capitalizing off of ignorance, right? Individuals who don't know any better.
Oh, and we've got Montel Williams and Troy Aikman out there encouraging that behavior.
Exactly.
But we're supposed to be our role models.
But and again, I'm upset about that, and we advocate against that as well. And you can go on Huffington Post where I write, you can go on News One, and all sorts of. As a matter of fact, Russell Simmons and I might be debating if he'll take the offer from CNN next week about the value of the Rush card, and I'm totally against that, and I've been going very hard against him on Fox and CNN, talking about how it's not right, so hopefully he'll be able to take that challenge. But we'll see next week. I'll let you know. But the problem with
this
is...
Good luck with that.
Well, hopefully we'll be able to get it done, but the thing is, as mad as we want to get against AIG, as mad as we want to do to be against Russell Simmons and the Rush card and title loans, and we can be upset with them. But getting upset with them is almost like getting upset at sharks for swimming in towards bloody waters, because sharks do what they do. It's their nature to do it. We didn't, you know, if we cut ourselves and swim in the ocean, we would know that sharks are going to come around. So financial literacy really is all about making sure that we stop cutting ourselves and swimming in the ocean. Cutting ourselves is by not preparing our credit responsibly, by not budgeting responsibly, by making sure that we can not succumb to these wishes of immediate instant gratification, and we can have delayed gratification to make sure we're more prosperous, because instant gratification in many instances, like the refund anticipation loan, is coming with a hefty price tag, like a 200 to 300% interest rate. So these are things that sometimes we do to ourselves, and as much as we want to get mad at those predators for sucking the life dry and try to make us capitalizing, they wouldn't make a dollar if we were fiscally responsible. And that's the type of thing of knowledge why we try to reach out to so many people to make sure they get this knowledge, because we just got to quit cutting ourselves and swimming in the ocean and getting mad at the sharks for swimming there.
Yeah. In Living in the Village, what concepts do you discuss in your book?
Well, we have a very comprehensive amount of concepts. We go over everything from how to budget responsibly, how to avoid financial predators, how to select insurance, the right amount of insurance, how to make sure you can prepare for your estate responsibly, how to make sure you can select the right amount of advisors, a financial advisor, a mortgage broker, the type of attorney, a CPA. We talk about where to put the emergency fund, how to maximize tax-deferred saving strategies, how to make sure that you have essentially you know, the right amount of the correct mentality and the correct amount of faith in your investment strategy, making sure that you can buy a home responsibly, making sure that you can buy versus lease, buy a car responsibly, send your kids to school responsibly, and college savings. And then we discuss what is a stock, what is a bond, how to invest in real estate. We go tips how to build your own business, and then how to invest in your community. And then we also have 15 individuals of people who all have overcome adversity in their lives. So 80% of the book is what I just mentioned. The rest of the 20% is about 15 individuals who have overcome adversity in their lives using principles of fiscal responsibility. And now, because they've been able to do that, they now give back to their community, and they're in a more effective way, like the gang member who now employs the Bloods, the inner-city youth who now has his own business, and he's 21, sitting next to a 33-year-old, and the 33-year-old is in Harvard. He's getting his MBA from Hampton, but they got the same job at Apple. Or Andrew Morrison, who is a multimillionaire, started his own company, was on Oprah, and he started his own company from the streets of Jamaica. I mean, these are individuals who, many of all demographics, of all income levels, who have overcome adversity. Now, I really wanted to make sure that we selected folks that gave a broad picture of individuals who, whether they, like a Nakia Smith, who was molested as a child, took in almost two foster children, and now at the age of 30, she has her own organization helping other people in need. And she's never made over $60,000 her whole life, but because she budgeted, she bought her first home at the age of 21. And when she lost her job at 27, she didn't skip a beat. She just started a not-for-profit. So these are stories that people can relate to and really makes financial literacy have a more humanistic quality, so they can say, ah, you know what, that single parent, yeah, that's my story. If she can do it, I can do it. Because most of us haven't gone through felonies, haven't gone through substance abuse, haven't gone through losing their parents. One story is called The Lucky Orphan. A kid came, lost his parent, his mother from AIDS, but he was less than 10 years old, didn't know his father. So these are types of stories that individuals have overcome, and there's many obstacles in life, but these folks have overcome these obstacles. And my role was just teaching you about the principles that they used and then showing you in real-life action how they were to be successful.
Well, that's so incredible, and I would love to talk to you all day, but unfortunately we have more segments to go. So if folks are interested in getting your book or visiting your website or being a part of what you are doing at Optimum Capital Manage, how do folks find you?
Well, you got to go to www.livinginthevillage.com. Again, that's livinginthevillage.com, and you'll be able to find information about the book. You'll also be able to leave your own personal testimonies, read other people's testimonies on how they've overcome adversity. And also, if you go to a good business in your area, no matter where you're at, leave a testimony on the website. We have a place where you can give good referrals from good businesses, whether it be a restaurant or a good service provider. Or you can do, we're asking individuals to join the money movement. When you go to www.moneymovement.org, where you go to the Money Movement and take the pledge, become an A-lister, that you're going to follow the 10 tenets of financial freedom. And this is all free, we don't charge anything for that, but we just want to make sure that people start to engage in a conversation of financial literacy. Then there's another website, optimum-capital.com, and we're there for you. We're very accessible. We have a lot of folks, and we're just ready to work.
Well, we are so excited to be a part of your money movement, Ryan. Thanks so much for joining us. And as always, if you don't have a pencil, guest websites are on ours at unlockyourwealth.com. Stay tuned for more after this.
Hey, this is Coca Brown from the hit radio show, The Truth with Coca Brown, on HollywoodOutlaws.com radio. And you're listening to me on Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio.
Hi, it's Marty Logan here from the Top Gun Sales Academy. You know, one thing I've learned over the years is that the most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Naturally, Wayne Gretzky, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, and Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside. They knew they could easily become. Truly, financial coaching could be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation, 1-866-966-9420. That toll-free number again is 1-866-966-9420, or simply visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Like, has your cell phone or iPod ever totally run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Now you can have all the power you need. The K-Free Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power or charge your device right on the spot. Available now for $99.95 at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis, K-I-N-E-S-I-S, industries.com. Like, go there, totally!
Even in today's economy, I, Count Dracula, have had to foreclose on my castle. But because of Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio, I have not only reacquired my castle, but I have opened a resort for the undead. Tune in to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She's the only one not trying to suck you dry.
Greetings. Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. You are listening to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. I am she, your purveyor of prosperity, the focus of today's Millionaire Minute, and our Unlock Your Wealth Radio to-go topic next Tuesday. I'm so excited, but it is that ever-popular time you have all been waiting for. It is the Keys to Riches segment, and for those of you just joining us for the first time, welcome to the broadcast. The Keys to Riches Financial Wellness Series is simply a baker's dozen of financial concepts that not only teach you how to think like the rich and be in control of your own money, but also gives you specific techniques to create or fix your credit, today's topic. Reduce debt, save and invest, building wealth through real estate, all while transforming your current financial habits into healthy money management skills. And we do that one key at a time, one week at a time, and we are already to our ninth key in our series, and that is create credit. And most personal finance experts talk about erasing debt, reducing debt, eliminating debt, paying off debt, but I haven't seen one yet that talked about the true value
of credit as a tool in your toolbox. Now, I have seen some so-called financial gurus talk about maxing out your credit cards to buy a property and do this and that, and that's not what I'm talking about, because it's ridiculous to borrow money at that rate to invest in real estate. And half of what I was seeing in the marketplace were investors going crazy, taking risks like doing 100% financing at the height of a market, and then trying to be able to get rents on that. And those were the first people to default on loans. They're not going to default on their individual house. They're going to default on their rental properties first, because those are income-producing properties. They don't. That's not their roof over their head, and if it goes unrented for a while because, well, they paid too much and they can't rent it for what they need to cover their mortgage net, they make bad decisions. But credit is an integral part of your overall financial plan, and you must use credit and do so wisely. There are gurus out there that advocate cutting out the cards, throwing them away, living on your debit card, but that's not realistic because we have to rent cars, we have to buy certain products and things that we may not have all of the money right now, or it may not make sense for us to pay all of that money up front. And it might be financially better for us to take a low or no interest rate loan on some items, and we'll discuss what those are in a moment. But it may make sense in your overall financial plan to acquire certain things on credit. Certainly, houses are one of those, especially if you're investing in real estate. And the idea is you must use credit wisely. And credit offers you better protections on your purchases than debit cards. So there's a value built into them. The key is not to not address your issues with regard to, oh, well, I just can't control myself. That's a load of crap. If you keep telling yourself you can't control yourself, you won't. But if you tell yourself you're in control and learn how to control yourself and when you need to amplify that level of control, like in the face of spontaneous purchases that may or may not be toward your financial future in a benefit kind of way. So what we need to do is we need to build the ideal credit profile. And yes, you can have that even if you've gone out and destroyed your credit, even if you have a foreclosure. All of these things are possible in the grand scheme of things. Most people don't trash their credit overnight. It's usually a culmination of events that occur over time. And so time, on our side, with proactive steps, can take and repair your credit. It's very simple. So you just have to be consistent and willing to make the effort, and you can work to build the ideal credit profile. So we're going to talk about what that is today, because next week, our key is remember real estate, and we'll talk about how this functions in what we call the four layers of risk: credit, capacity, capital, and collateral. And today's key is an integral part of next week's key, which is remember real estate, and that's where we're going to learn the keys to the castle, how we truly build financial freedom. And it's once we get out of a rental position and into an ownership of position. So we're going to talk about that next week on what it takes to qualify and how to systematically build the ideal credit and financial profile together to create financial independence. So let's talk about your credit first. And I will give a book away if somebody can call in the next 5 minutes at 718-508-9002. I'll give one of my books away if you can answer this credit or answer this question about credit. There are 52 factors that go into your credit score when your credit score is calculated. And many people think these two factors are involved in a credit score, but they're not. They deal with underwriting decisions. What are those two items that most people think are in their credit score, but they're not? Now, let's talk about credit in terms of two things: our credit score and our credit profile. Our credit score is separate from our credit profile and isn't something you should be worrying about. And I know you're probably going, oh, what? What do you mean? And because you hear about scores, everything. Scores only of value if your credit profile is in the ideal underwriting position, because they look at the score after they look at the value of the credit profile as a whole. And it's even more important now because of what went on in the mortgage markets. And they showed in a real-life, very financially costly demonstration about why you can't just go on score alone. You can't underwrite on that. That's why there's four layers of risk. So there are, or what did I say, 52? I'm thinking of weeks of the year. There are 85 factors that go into your credit score. Only three make a hill of a bean's worth of difference. Not the two that I'm waiting for somebody to call in and ask the, answer the question. So there are 85 factors that go into your credit score, but only three make a hill of a bean's worth of difference. And let me tell you what those three are and what their percentages are. Okay, so the number one credit score factor, which is 35% of your score, is your available and open credit. 30% of your score is on-time payments. Bet you didn't think that was number two. Bet you thought that was number one. And the third most important factor is length of time the accounts have been open. 35% of your score is available credit. So if you have a $1,000 limit on a card and you have $100 charged on it, so I have a $100 balance, you have $900 open and available. So that is added up all the way across for every account you have. So if you have a $10,000 car loan and you paid off $2,000 of it, that's $2,000 available technically. Even though it's a closed end financial transaction, technically you've created from the amount, from the limit, you've got $2,000 of space. Then you have on-time payment. And 30% of your score is based on the last 24 months of on-time payments, not your entire history, but the last 24 months. Because if you have a hiccup that's like a genuine catastrophic event that creates a financial hiccup, not just that you're slacking on your bills, it'll be demonstrated in the last 24 months, and your ability to recover from that will be about 2 years from any financial hiccup. So 2 years, last 24 months, is 30%. And 15% of your score is on-time payments. So 80% of your score has to do with only three factors, even though there's 85 that go into the underwriting thing. So these are the three that we need to pay attention to. And I'm going to tell you why, because I'm going to tell you how underwriters look at this. That's how your score is calculated. And in a manual underwriting scenario with a quality credit profile, it doesn't matter what your score says, because you could get a really high credit score by having one open trade line for 6 months and just happen to have had your credit pulled after the balance was reported as being paid off, just as the luck of the draw, okay? And I've seen that happen. Now, when we talk about credit from an underwriting perspective, we'll talk about how it blends into the four layers of risk next week. But specifically, what an underwriter wants to look at, especially for a large long-term debt like a mortgage or a midterm debt like a car, they're going to look at how many trade lines you have. They're going to look at how long they've been open and what has been your payment history in that time. So then what they do first is how many accounts do you have? Now, if you're going for a mortgage underwriting scenario and you're using government financing, you only need two lines of credit, or what they call trade lines. They like to see 24 months of history with zero lates in that 24 months, meaning 30 days or more. So that's underwriting step number one. And then they want to see the 24-month minimum, and they want to see no lates in that period of time. Now, if you're going for a conforming conventional loan where you can get better interest rates, it's four trade lines, 24 months minimum, zero lates. Now, the longer you have credit and the more stewardly and wisely you use it has to do a lot with whether or not they're going to go ahead. And the quality of your credit also plays a factor into it. And let me talk about credit quality. Okay, there is a difference between a Visa MasterCard where you can get cash off of it and a difference between a department store credit card that's usually offered not by a bank but by a finance company where you have usually have double-digit interest rates and really low balances, and you can only spend the money in that store or their chain of stores. Okay, so you could use like a Target credit card at a Marshall Field's because they're owned by the same company, but it's still you can only spend that money in the store. So it's not a quality trade line in an underwriter's perspective. So if you have a ton of those department store cards and no Visa MasterCard, you technically don't have a backup plan. You can build credit. You can get your 24 months with zero late. But, again, you can only spend that money at that store, and it's really high interest rates. The same goes for automobile loans and home loans. Underwriters know who the subprime companies are, which means that they take the crappy loans that nobody else wants to underwrite, the ones that people have poor credit or no credit, and that they, because of the statistical rate of default on those is so high, that you have a high interest rate. So you could take a look when you talk about credit quality and look at both people buying the same car for the same price, same features, same options, and one person, let's say, and I'm going to do this easy so I can do it in my head, so I can do the math in my head. Let's say that the price of the financing, they both put the same amount of money down, but the price of the financing is $10,000 that they finance. Joe Blow goes to ABC Bank and gets a quality loan. And so his interest rate is, say, 6%. So his interest is going to be like $60 to borrow that money. All right. But let's say Jane Blow goes to ABC Finance Company because she can't go to ABC Bank. So she goes to ABC Finance Company and borrows $10,000, but her interest rate is 12%. So she's now paying $120 in interest, twice as much as the other guy, to buy the same car, which is a depreciating asset. And so we always should consider whether or not we finance depreciating assets anyway. And so her cost of money is much higher. And you can see that because you'll see the amount borrowed and then the payment amount. And underwriters are smart because interest rates are interest on loans is front-loaded. So you pay the interest and a little bit of principal. The interest and a little bit of principal. 7/8 of your payment in the beginning part of your years goes to principal. Only one or interest and only 1/8 goes to principal. So it's going to take you a lot more money to repay the same loan. So if everybody pays off their note in, say, 36 months, all right, Joe Blow paid half the interest privilege that Jane Blow did for the same car, same loan, same money, same scenario. What that does for you, and this is something we'll talk about more next week, is it affects your ratios. And so we passed our five-minute window, so I'm going to tell you the answer since nobody called in to answer the trivia question. And there are two factors that do not go into your credit score. That is the Equal Credit Opportunity Act factors, race, color, creed, religion, marital status, blah, blah, blah. So all of those do not count. So your credit profile has no idea if you're a boy or a girl. It just knows what stuff you have and your identifying marks, like name, address, phone number, social security, date of birth, blah, blah, blah. So the other factor is income. That does not play a factor in your score. So it doesn't matter how much you make. That is not calculated in there. Now, what does affect underwriting with regard to income is what they call affordability ratios. So when you go into a bank, your income and your debt create this ratio, and it determines your affordability for whatever financing you're applying for. So here's how this makes a difference in the real world. You're like, well, it doesn't matter. It's just the price you got to pay. Well, here's how it affects you. So Joe Blow and Jane Blow, they want to go individually and buy a house. So Joe Blow goes to buy a house, and Jane Blow goes to buy a house, and the credit is pulled, and they make the same amount of money. Okay? And again, round numbers for me. So they make 10 grand a month. All right? Joe Blow's payment is $60 a month for his car. Jane's is $120. So she just lost $60 of available income, money she could be spending to buy a home. She's wasting it on interest on a car because she had to get a crappy loan. So did y'all follow me on that? You know what? I should probably do a pen cast and put that up on the website later. So this is what you're faced with, and this is why it's so important to get quality credit and quality trade lines, because it affects your affordability. And that is why we need to think about the quality of our credit and what we're doing every day with our credit, as much as we are focusing on our savings and spending plan, because financial wellness is a part of that. Because now Jane Blow can't buy the same house that Joe Blow can and live in the same neighborhood, because she lost a chunk of affordability. Plus, the underwriter looking at her mortgage is going to say, but you went to a crappy car place. Why is that? Was there something that I don't know about? You're going to raise suspicions. Let me tell you something that also does not affect your credit score that most people think. And it's because in 99, a law was passed to change this. And that is inquiries. So if people tell you that inquiries affect your credit score, they're lying to you because the law says it can't. What inquiries affect is an underwriting decision. I'll give you a specific example. Okay, let's say you come in and apply for a loan, and I see that you want to buy a home, and I'm looking at your credit, and I see that you have also applied for two car loans, a boat loan, a motorcycle loan, and four other home loans. That's no big deal because you're shopping interest rate. You want the best deal, so that's not a big deal. But I see all of these others. Oh, and five credit cards. You applied for five credit cards. So I don't see resulting trade lines yet, so I don't know as an underwriter if these people issued your credit or not. If they did issue you credit and you've already gone out and maxed it out, that might change your affordability ratios. You may not be able to afford the loan that you're applying for me. So it affects your underwriting. So that's why you have to be careful what you're applying credit for. Apply it only when you need it, and apply for it or pull your own credit before you ever go apply for credit to see what's going on. My husband's had his identity assumed three different times, and some people are going to jail for that now. I've had my identity assumed. You never know what's going on. That's why you have to be vigilant with your credit profile. And holy smokes, we're almost out of our show, so let's get to our nuts and bolts. Our key statement for the week is, in order to have a truly complete financial profile, I must maintain the quality of my credit and monitor it regularly. Our key affirmation for the week is, I am a great steward of my credit. And our key action item for this week is to pull your credit report and review it for inaccuracies. All you have to do is surf over to unlockyourwealth.com, sign up for our complimentary membership, our key membership. It's a $20 a month value, and use the strategy from your subscription to modify and create and review your credit and make necessary adjustments. We will continue this discussion into next week's key, as credit is a very important part of what we do when we go to begin the acquisition of real estate prospects. Thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for Dr. Robert Barone and Ryan Max stopping by and being a part of the show. Thank you for dropping in and listening. Hopefully we have shed some light on the murky financial waters you may have been navigating lately. But never fear, because finally, financial freedom can be yours at www.unlockyourwealth.com. I am Heather Wagenhall saying thanks for joining us,
and you go out and make it a millionaire day. See you on Tuesday at 6:30 a.m. Pacific Standard Time.